everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Points on the Board, where I break down topics in the intersectionality of sports with culture and politics. And tonight, I have a good show for you once again. Today, we're going to talk about, it's a little bit old, but it came out after I had completed last week's show, and that is the Fox Sports programming shift. They've canceled three shows which were deemed terrible, not by me, but by the audience, because they saw no ratings. Then we're going to talk about something that's kind of flown under the radar, and purposely, because Shark Camp did not want this really to be big news, but they have settled the rape accusation lawsuit. And then there is Shane Gillis, who shocks the ESPY with bow jokes that I frankly found the delivery was awful, tentative, and made what should have been smackdown, laughter, tail-off jokes barely chuckle-worthy. And I'm not saying it's me. When they panned to the audience, that's all they were doing. Then we're going to talk about the WNBA expansion fees in conjunction with the pay me what you owe us crowd, the female players of the WNBA. And then we'll close it out with our final whistle, which is our lightning round. TJ Watt, I think he's been paid for what he's done, because he's overpaid for where he's at right now. Tucker Carlson's stupidity, comments on transgender athletes, and then Trump threatening to block the Washington Commanders' D.C. stadium. So let's get down to it, my friends. But before we do, don't forget the bookmark, grumblingsmedia.com, and follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, and Spotify under the handle Grumblings Media. So first up on tap, Fox Sports faced mounting pressure from low-rated debacles they created pretty much a year ago with two of the shows, and one show having gone through multiple host changes combined with internal controversies. Well, it's led to what people are saying are abrupt cancellations, but they're really not. They're cancellations of underperforming shows. So in a nutshell, Fox canceled three shows that were underperforming. It wasn't an abrupt cancellation because within a few days, they announced a new partnership with Barstool Sports. Now, these cancellations included the ousting of key talent amid lawsuits, a.k.a. Joy Taylor. And there's a lot of workplace tensions. It's kind of funny. Right now, I'm an old school guy. I'm doing some nostalgia TV, watching Three's Company from the 70s and 80s. It ran from, I want to say, 77 to about 84. And when I go into nostalgia phase, I did a lot of research because of the internet. And there was a lot of tension on that set, too. And it was because of a lack of spine by some of the people to do what was right. And I don't know if that's the same here with Fox Sports, but I think they're all walking on eggshells because of a controversial lawsuit that involves one of their leads, Joy Taylor, and her brand has been completely destroyed. She, in her circle, she may be taken seriously as somebody who has sports knowledge and can hold a conversation, and that's debatable. But then again, that's also opinion-based. We all think like that. We think our words are the smartest. But that said, when you're just branded as a piece of meat, which Joy Taylor has been branded as, that's going to hurt the overall look and appeal of these shows, and that's going to translate into more than likely lower ratings. So this shakeup obviously coincides with what some are calling a bold pivot to a partnership with Barstool Sports. I'll talk about that in a moment. But this is a strategic realignment within television, sports television. What Fox is doing, or FS1 is doing, is what ESPN is doing with the Pat McAfee show. They're trying to prioritize fresh, unfiltered voices over established formats that are struggling to maintain viewership. The problem with FS1 is they never had strong viewership. They were always the ugly redheaded stepchild when compared to ESPN. Whereas ESPN owned the market, they have literally collapsed because they have gone full-blown political left with racism, with bigotry. And I do mean that. You know, and it started out with, it didn't start out, it's been there, but it continued, you know, Jemele Hill, let go. It's there still today with Ryan Clark, at times with Stephen A. Smith. I'm not a Stephen A. Smith fan, smart guy, but he's like Gavin Newsom, plays the political winds, chastises Democrats, but then come election season, cha-ching, Democrat vote. Then plays a race card when it's convenient. He's a ratings hound. He's a personality. He's a showman. He tells the audience what he thinks they want to hear. Throws that red meat down. So, in essence, he's like, what, $100 million for 500,000 viewers a day. 500,000 viewers a day. That's pathetic. It's not a product. I mean, that partly because of how TV is fragmented, but how ESPN has run off its audience. You know, I always tell my Latino brethren, you know, obviously you see my skin tone. Oop, hold on. There we go. You see my skin tone, and you're like, oh, Anglo. I'm not going to sit here and lie. I got the Spaniard in me, but I also got all kinds of other bloodlines. I just got the Spaniard gene that came out. But I tell my brethren, you know, when it comes to marketing, I go, our demographic may be the fastest moving, fastest rising Democrat, especially on the internet. We're the fastest growing demographic on the internet. I go, America is still 70% Anglo. You do not, from a marketing perspective, turn off that audience. And that's what ESPN has done. You know, that's why their numbers are in the toilet. So this move at FS1 to bring in Barstool, it does underscore the high stakes demand of media competition. That's a nice way of saying there's a lot of money involved in these industries, and FS1 has been bleeding since its inception. I once knew a VP over at Fox Sports, and he says, William, it's like each department bunkers down in their own state, you know. When it comes to working together, they don't work together, because if somebody fails, they don't want to be blamed for it. When it comes to working together to promote something that may take financials from each department, they won't do it because each department is budgeted. You know, so if it fails, that VP or that executive running that department doesn't want to have his head on chopping block. And he says that has literally just really stopped Fox Sports from actually being able to compete with ESPN, because the civil war within the corporate environment there doesn't allow anything to really move forward successfully. And a vice president of Fox Sports told me that. This was many years ago. Many years ago. But you still need audience engagement, and these operational decisions, they're going to carry immediate consequences. People are out of work. We're not talking just the talent, but the shows surrounding the talent. A lot of people on the backside. They'll move on. But the truth of the matter is Barstool comes in with their own shtick, their own team, their own production. You know, they're building a new studio out in Chicago. You're not going to see the L.A. crowd moving over there. You know, so are there underlying reasons for why the show failed, and can Barstool Sports succeed? And is this the new future of sports programming television? So let's get into this. The shows that were canceled, this was last week, actually, about a week ago now. Fox Sports canceled three FS1 shows because they could not attract audiences. You know, Charlie Dixon, an executive caught up in all the turmoil with his sexual harassment lawsuit, sexual battery lawsuit. All the shows were created under him. He is now a former executive, fired a while ago. And one of the shows canceled was Speak. Speak is a daily sports talk show, and it focuses on debates and hot takes. And it was co-hosted by Joy Taylor, Keyshawn Johnson, and Paul Pierce. And it ended after nearly 3 years. Now, the problem with that show, you have three strong alpha personalities there. There's nobody that you end up liking. You know, they are all three dislikable. To create a set that the audience embraces, you got to have certain segments represented there. The person that everybody likes, you know, the person who's going to say the opposite, not the opposite, but I mean, they're just going to take a different viewpoint. And the person that is, okay, let's see what both of y'all have said. And maybe we're looking at it from this perspective. Here you have three people who just spoke their minds in brutally ugly fashion. And they thought it would be good. All these shows did. In fact, most shows like this do. Think it's good to denigrate the talent. There's a disconnect that's starting to happen between talent, meaning the professional players, and these network shows. Because the talent on the shows think, hey, I got to denigrate, be derogatory towards the talent out there to make a name for myself. And when that happens, you become unlikable. Keyshawn Johnson has always been, he underperformed as an NFL player, but God bless him. He was able to live the dream that none of us could. So I'm not knocking him in terms of comparison to me. But in terms of his expectations, he never lived up to them. But he's one of the biggest trash talkers. So I noticed from when he retired, from even before as a player, there wasn't a lot of respect from the fandom from him because he didn't live up to his talent. And we talked a lot of trash. People would immediately go to, well, you weren't all that. You know, you're knocking this guy, but who the hell were you when you played the game? See, those are the little nuances that as an executive, you got to look at your talent, you know. And then Joy Taylor, she was seen as nothing but a sex pot after this lawsuit emerged and a hypocrite because a lot of things she said before the lawsuit emerged, she's now allegedly guilty of. So that show was doomed after a while, you know, because it just turns people off. Now, when I went and researched the ratings, I could find none. But Pardon the Interruption, another show similar to that, someone had about 300,000 to 600,000 viewers. That's not even a lot for one of the most established legacy shows from ESPN. But 300,000 to 600,000 viewers. So you're probably looking at about 100,000, 150,000. I'm probably about 150,000, 200,000 for Speak. And you're probably looking at about 100,000 in the key demo. Now, in most traditional shows, once you hit 100,000, you may as well look towards having that conversation with the boss to get canceled. Now, maybe the sports industry is different, but the bottom line is these shows cost money to produce, and the numbers I'm giving you are logical deductions. You're talking cancellation. So legitimate cancellation, yes. Well, Taylor, she was not fired, and firing her would have brought more legal issues. Her contract was simply not renewed, and it's based on the show being canceled. So legally, she doesn't have much of a leg to stand on with a, you fired me because of this lawsuit. No, we fired you because we don't want to renew your fat salary with a show that's going nowhere. And legally, it's kind of hard to battle that. You know, and so let's talk about Joy Taylor now. She was named in the January 2025 lawsuit by former makeup artist Nosheen Faraji. She alleged Taylor told Faraji to, quote, get over it after Faraji reported sexual battery to her when they were talking. She said, hey, this happened to me. Charlie Dixon, by definition, gave me, or it was sexual battery towards me. And she told Joy Taylor told her to get over it, you know. And the suit also claimed that Taylor had an affair with Dixon, which Taylor denies. But there's quotes in there to the effect of, you know, you use them and abuse them and then use them to move on up the corporate ladder by holding that over their head. And that's what's kind of come out, allegedly. That. So Charlie Dixon was fired from Fox Sports in April, just a few months ago. Which means Fox Sports started moving forward with what they were going to do, to clean that environment up, to try to get on the straight and narrow and start beginning to move forward. So maybe as early as April when they fired Charlie, they said these shows are either going to stand on their own, and if they don't, we're going to fire them all, and that will also wipe and rid us of another excess problem without any legal ramifications. So what this lawsuit did is it exposed, obviously, an environment that was unfriendly to qualified people, where if you could sleep your way to the top, you weren't the best qualified. But I'm being facetious there. But my point is, it also created tensions. From that moment on, that lawsuit, people were walking on eggshells. Now, the lawsuit also, on a side note, accuses Skip Bayless of giving Faraji lingering hugs and kisses on the cheek, you know, while putting his body against hers and pressing against her breast. I'll be honest, no one believes that. No one believes that. They're like, because she mentioned something about Skip offering her like $1 million or something, or lots of money. It was like, no, we just don't believe you. You know, and what she's probably trying to do, because if this is true or not, I don't know. But with Bayless, I'm like, just go get a hooker. There's hotter chicks in her. Look, I'm sorry. Sexual affairs at times are also created by timing. Who's available? Who's there? The environment around him, not necessarily how somebody looks. But a lot of people were saying, look, Bayless could have gotten somebody hotter than that. $1 million, you ain't paying that. Yeah. But Faraji allegedly told Bayless she was not interested in mentioning her ovarian cancer to get him off her back. You know, that portion of this lawsuit has kind of gone, died down, so we don't know where that stands now. But nobody sees Skip worrying about that. Now, Taylor's spokesman in February, after this broke out in January, said, quote, the claims set forth against Ms. Taylor are devoid of merit and appear to have been strategically framed to create unwarranted publicity rather than to seek legitimate redress. Unquote. Of course, that's how all these lawsuits happen to be. It's to maximize publicity, to embarrass the people being accused, and to create a financial settlement. We're going to talk about one of those here shortly. So, the next show that was canceled, or moving on, the next show was Breakfast Bar. That was a morning sports talk show featuring discussions and analysts hosted by Craig Carden, Danny Parkins, and Mark Shillereth. Out of that, the only name was Mark Shillereth. At least with Speak, you had a couple names, Keyshawn Johnson, Paul Pierce. You know, who was the other one? I already forgot it. Joy Taylor. Joy Taylor, Keyshawn Johnson, Paul Pierce. Yeah, duh. This one here, you know, unless you're in New York, you don't know Craig Carden. Or is it maybe even Danny Parkins? Who knows? Craig Carden. It's Craig Carden. Because he's a New York City product. Danny Parkins and Mark Shillereth. And Mark Shillereth is well known by a lot of people. Obviously, his time ended at ESPN. He moved on to FS1. His career is probably, for all intents and purposes, done on a national level. He'll go on with his podcast, do things locally. I assume he's living in Denver, etc. So he'll still keep his career. But he may have... this time may have come and gone, and that's fine. And the reason I say that, there's 10 zillion athletes, and the longer you're in, the more expensive you get in when they can get something cheaper. Nothing to do with Mark Shillereth being over the hill in talent to be an analyst, because he's a great analyst. The ratings, no ratings reported again, but again, likely lower than ESPN's Get Up, which had 300,000 to 400,000 viewers per show. So these guys were probably looking at 150,000. And they probably weren't even cutting it in the key demo. So they were whacked, you know. So in terms of Craig Carden, he left WFAN, WFAN, the fan, and he had a drive time program, which is key. So he's probably going to try to look back, going to try to get back to that. But it's now with Tiki Barber and Evan Roberts. So we'll see how that works out for him. The other show canceled was The Facility, a sports talk show centered on NFL and football insights. And that was hosted by Emmanuel Acho, Chase Daniels, James Jones, and LeSean McCoy. This is probably the most visible in terms of player recognition. The show lasted less than a year. Now, this show is the epitome of LeSean McCoy, great running back in his prime. As his prime started to end, he still talked the same trash, became unlikable with the fans. And that extended to the show. You know, he's got a Super Bowl ring sitting on the bench. In sports, when you're of his stature, that's not a bragging right. Meaning you don't go, yeah, I got a Super Bowl ring. It's like a backup quarterback, the Tom Brady. Yeah, I got Super Bowl rings, you know, or Terry Bradshaw. I got Super Bowl rings. Well, what did you contribute? And I'm not saying this to hurt him. I'm saying this is how I was in this industry since the mid-90s. That's how fans look at these people. The executives obviously have ignored or there's a disconnect with what the fans want from their analysts in terms of their personalities. James Jones, he was beloved by the fans because he was the little engine that could. He always kept coming back. Everybody loved him. Chase Daniels, he's that backup I talked about, earned like $40, $60 million in 14 years. And, you know, it's not their fault. I don't blame the backup quarterback. You give me a backup quarterback job, I'm there like white on rice. Or brown on rice. That's what they eat, brown rice. But all these guys, or Chase Daniels, yeah. And then there's Emmanuel Acho. Emmanuel Acho had a very brief career. I looked him up a few years ago when he started on the scene. Now, the problem with Emmanuel Acho, he plays a race card when it's convenient. He comes across as a moderate, but then he'll play the race card. That turns people off. Remember what I said about the audience? You know, marketing is the one area where you can legally discriminate to market to your audience. Why do you think you get Colt 45 with Billy D, the great Billy D Williams, on there? Why? Because he's marketing a specific audience. Yeah, you get noodles in Koreatown on the Korean channels with, you know, with Chinese, Asians, you know. There's, so marketing is done certain ways, you know. So Emmanuel Acho, what I'm saying is that's allowed. The problem with Emmanuel Acho is he wants to come across as moderate, then preach to the white crowd, or you whiteies, you know. And he wants to do it in a nice, soft, sensitive way. And he thinks he's actually coming across as, you understand where I'm coming from. He's not having the race conversation that I keep talking about that we should have. He's preaching and talking down to white America at times. Chase Daniels actually laid back. I see him with Diana Russi. They have a podcast. I forget the name of it, but it's done by The Athletic. And a plug for The Athletic, the New York Times, nothing but a bunch of leftist swine. A lot of people there have wished death on conservatives and people who do that, my take is simple. The day they begin their next journey, Mother Earth is a much better place. You know, so, and my point being is New York Times is a hateful, vile group over there. But The Athletic that the Times now owns, that's old school journalism. So good stuff, good stuff. And Chase Daniels with the Diana Russi, that podcast, pretty good. Check it out. You know, so you have these different viewpoints, but not all of them are likable. Emmanuel Acho, you love him, you hate him. You really hate him, and you see where you start to format in your mind, okay, he's not about giving us analysts. He's about preaching what's going to get him ahead in terms of how he wants to be perceived, not what he really wants to talk about or engage with the audience. And LeSean McCoy, he just talks a lot of trash. You know, and you're like, what? Where the hell did that take from? You know, so I found Chase Daniel, and if I, like Paul Pierce and James Jones, I watched these shows, but not enough to really remember. They weren't memorable, what they said. Yeah, and that's not good or bad. It's just maybe it is a good thing. Sometimes you don't have to stick out and you can be complimentary. So we did have ratings for this. 121,000 viewers. 121,000 viewers. So I may be overstating speak. I mean, they're probably looking at 150,000. And that's lower than ESPN's First Take, which is 500,000. 154,000 on Mondays, 121,000 on average. That's terrible. So I would imagine that. Let me backtrack here. So, yeah, I'm right. With the speak, 3 year, maybe 150. With breakfast, probably 125, 150, right around there too. You know, so all these people were kind in their words, except for Joy Taylor. She showed a picture of herself working out. You know, but people said this was an impromptu firing, came out of nowhere. That's not true. Maybe to the audience, it came out of nowhere. Maybe the audience, it came out of nowhere. But behind the scenes, they were planning these. A few days later, enter Barstool Sports. Fox Sports pivoted. They're trying to follow ESPN's path of using Pat McAfee-style formula. Now, here's the interesting part. Barstool was owned by ESPN for a long while, and they didn't use him. And Dave Portnoy will be the first to tell you he hated that. But regardless, FS1 is signaling a strategic shift toward bold, unfiltered content. And that's what you're going to get with Barstool. And I think you're going to get it to a point you regret it. Pat McAfee understands and can walk that fine line between the network, what they want, what they expect, and keep his audience happy with the real takes. Dave Portnoy, he's like a frat boy. And that's eventually going to burn this relationship. But for right now, the move does signal a strategic shift toward what some will consider bold, unfiltered content. I view it as just bold, unfiltered content to the point it becomes bold, too unfiltered, and too controversial. So, what's going to happen is you're going to have Barstool content on FS1. It's going to be podcasts, digital segments, and appearances by personalities like Dave Portnoy and Dan Big Cat Katz. I've heard of that. I don't watch Barstool. I like I said, to me, it's just dumb, white boy, frat shtick. Really, that's what I see. But they cater to their demographic. And I'm not knocking them because they're white. I'm just giving you a stereotypical image, which I know will hit. But they're big. They're large. Why 70% of America is Anglo? And when you talk as they do, you get the black crowd. You get the Latino crowd. What I'm saying is they don't, their shtick kind of includes all crowds, which is what you want. We become so fragmented, and then we hate somebody. Well, why aren't you watching the show? Well, it's because it's racist, man. They put me down all the time. Or it's racist. They put this group down, that group down. Oh, you're racist for not supporting our racism. Give Barstool Sports credit. They don't do that. Give Pat McAfee credit. He doesn't do that. It's not that they're anti-woke. It's just because Portnoy can be seen woke in many ways. You know? And he has his own controversies. But he's going to join the Big Noon Kickoff, which is their college sports show. So they are integrating him. And they're going to have their own show. Barstool, Portnoy and Dan Big Cat Katz is going to appear on a Monday show on FS1. I've got to be honest. Dave Portnoy was involved in some controversy. He just denigrated his boss. Now, I come from the military. We would have been fighting. I mean, I would have beat his fucking ass. excuse me, sorry. Seriously, you don't do that. Then you can fire me. Then I'm going to sue you, you know, just to make life miserable, you know. But Portnoy, is that's what happens when you have a lot of ducks with the sea surrounding you, you know. I tell you now, there ain't no Latino would have taken that crap. I'm being stereotypical. But most people would not have taken that crap. And that guy took it. His boss has denigrated him, saying exerting his who he is and what he is, because the boss didn't like the point the podcaster was making. Total disrespect. And that's my point. Once that disrespect was there, really? I remember there was one time somebody did something I was working with, and he was actually funding the project, and he did something. I got in my car. I drove to him. I opened his door. I said, don't you ever bleep and do that again. Don't you ever, ever. And I was in his face. He was bigger than me. I was so angry. I didn't care. I'm a scrapper. I don't care. I'll get my butt beat. I don't care. But I saw the fear in his eyes. And he was looking behind me, hoping somebody was there. He never did it again. Bullies are bullies. And Portnoy was acting like a bully there. You know, I just had to say that because he can be an arrogant penis at times and nobody challenges him because he's Dave Portnoy. You know, that's the problem with a lot of these rich guys who want to pretend they're ghetto or they're barrio or they're white for the trailer park. They're not. You know, anyway, enough of my rant there. But and my point in all of that is the respect. That's why I'm so angry about it. I'm like, bro, you don't treat your talent like that. You want to scream at him, you scream at him behind closed doors. So anyway, him and Big Cat are going to do a Monday show. And it's a studios being built in Chicago. Again, the jobs lost. Well, Barstow's doing their own thing with their own people. Again, Partner talked about how ESPN didn't use them properly. They hated that. And obviously both sides talk about the potential. So that's the story, you know. And it's funny because I brought that up to my partner. I go, you do know Barstow signed? He goes, really? So this should be bigger news than it is, but it also shows the limitations of how people view FS1. They're just not a player. People know Colin Cowherd because of his days at ESPN, but they really don't watch a show, not like they did at ESPN. So regardless, these developments at Fox Sports, it does highlight the accountability demanded by ratings. No matter who you are, you will get canceled. The ratings aren't there. And let's be honest, after they got rid of Skip Bayless on the show with Shannon Sharpe, that show eventually went away too. So, every single person is replaceable. Do not ever forget that. But here's why these players were replaceable. None of them have the magical gravitas as an early Skip Bayless, as a Chris Berman, TJ Jackson, his cohort, as a Howard Cosell. I mean, the best you got today is Stephen A. Smith and Pat McAfee. Stephen A. Smith, you saw that, 500,000 people. And what irks me is the conservative side. They're all sucking up to Stephen A. Smith, who goes with the win. The guy's a bigot. He really is. He really is. And then there's Pat McAfee, who has bent the knee at times to public pressure, which he should never have. So his audience growth, he has limited that future growth. But he's made it. God bless them all. Stephen A. Smith, Pat McAfee, they have made it. So I'm not knocking where they're at, but I'm like, y'all ain't all that. And yet you two are the standard bearers for everybody else. It says a lot right now about the media landscape in sports. So FS1 is going to forge ahead with the Barstool integration, which is kind of unique. FS1 is looking at adaptability, seeking what they view as a bold collaboration. And they're also setting the stage for the evolvement of this medium, which is good news for people like myself. We're small, young, starting out. The quality of our podcast, we're still learning. I expect to be polished in another couple of years. I was just talking to my partner, and he's like, yeah, you come a long way. You still suck. I'm like, no, I have an audience I'm building. But I understand what his point. People like Sean Hannity, I'll talk about when they look at the first 5 years of their shows, like, ugh. You know, my point being is this is a growth process, you know, and so all these young guns today will be tomorrow's stars. They'll be the next Dave Portnoy's, the next Pat McAfee's, and we'll see how all that goes, you know. But FS1 is trying to take advantage of it. So will it work? You know, McAfee's working at ESPN, but does Portnoy have that charisma? Portnoy is not on McAfee's level. He's right now on the level of a Bomani Jones or a Ryan Clark. They got great gigs, but nobody really likes them. But for some reason, the network does. That's probably where Portnoy will fall under. You know, we'll see how it turns out. That's my take. That's my take. Moving on. Shannon Sharpe settles his rape accusation lawsuit. So, Shannon Sharpe has reached settlement with Gabriela Zuniga in the lawsuit that accused him of rape and sexual assault, resolving claims that have been tied to what was one time a long-term consensual relationship without any admission of guilt. In other words, lawsuit settled, did not admit he was guilty. The woman in this lawsuit, they both had a long-term consensual relationship. It was sex. That's all it was. Sharpe's in his 50s. This woman is 20. So he was sleeping with her when she was probably 18, 19, 20, right around there. And his penis got him in trouble. The agreement was announced a few days ago, maybe 4 days ago. And it was done on the down low, very low key. So you have this development coupled with the accuser's subsequent retirement from her OnlyFans career. It tells us two things. Are we going to be witnessing the potential return to broadcasting at ESPN for Shannon Sharpe? And this woman's retirement from OnlyFans means this was likely a figure in excess of $10 million. And when I say in excess of $10 million, probably in excess of $10 million to the point when she got taxes taken out and all of that, she probably took home $10 million, $8 to $10 million. So you're probably looking at about a $14, $15, $16 million settlement. So does Sharpe come back now that he's concluded this lawsuit? Well, let's review here. The lawsuit was filed in April 2025. She alleged that Sharpe sexually assaulted her multiple times in October 2024 and then again in January 2025. The woman claims she and Sharpe had a two-year consensual relationship, and she requested $50 million in damages from the 57-year-old player. He's 57-year-old, so I'm thinking 54, 57. So financial terms of the settlement were undisclosed, but some reports indicate Sharpe will pay an amount likely exceeding $10 million. I'm thinking $14 to $16 million. I'm thinking Busby wanted her to have $10 million take home after taxes. So after the lawsuit in April, he announced he was stepping away from ESPN. And his reason cracked everybody up. It was so hypocritical. I sincerely appreciate the overwhelming and ongoing support I have received from my family, fans, friends, and colleagues.
That wasn't it.
Here it is. I will be devoting this time to my family and responding and dealing with these false and disruptive allegations set against me.
Well, if they were so false, so disruptive, why did he settle out for as big a number as he did?
Well, let's talk about that. He's looking at it, they say, at a potential $100 million contract. I find that hard to believe, giving him and Stephen A. Smith. I don't think they're going. And then, the problem, too, they're giving these fat contracts and they're allowing these guys to own other shows and do other stuff, which shows you how far the media landscape in sports has cratered, where mediocre talent can get charisma, great personality. He's not very as the Kamala Harris interview proved to the world, as this lawsuit proved to the world by him putting himself in that position. So let's look at from the woman's perspective here real quick. The settlement was announced via a post from the woman's attorney, Tony Busby. That was done last week. On Instagram, he stated, both sides acknowledge a long-term consensual and tumultuous relationship. After protracted and respectful negotiations, I'm pleased to announce that we have reached a mutually agreed upon resolution. All matters have now been addressed satisfactorily, and the matter is closed. The lawsuit will thus be dismissed with prejudice. No admission of guilt was disclosed. Then Zuniga responded. And Zuniga being Sharpe, the woman accusing Sharpe, she's a 20-year-old OnlyFans model.
He's 57. So this happened. He was probably about 54, 55. She's probably 18. She stated on Instagram after the settlement, "I am officially retiring from OnlyFans. Thank you to everyone who supported me on this journey." Unquote. Translation, "I don't have to show my boobs and booty and beg for cash. I got to be some cash now." So will Sharp return to ESPN? The preseason approaches less than a week away with the Chargers and Lions set for July 31st. Some around ESPN believe Sharp's time at the network is over. I do not. Oh, I'm sorry, real quick. Tony Busby did post on X after the settlement stating he is now accepting new clients and shared an image of his private plane. Okay, so the settlement resolves the legal issues with no admission of guilt, potentially clearing the path for his pledge preseason return. Now, the reason this is important is, let's say, and this was I was going to allude to earlier, and I paused here because I lost my train of thought, but had this gone to court, I think this was all BS, but Trump had some public statements that got caught, and, you know, "I'm going to choke you. Man, that's a scary thing. You see how big he is. Stereotypes coming into play. He's a little petite woman. And I think Sharp wasn't right. I don't think any of this happened. It's like the storm all came together, and Sharp was at the heart of it in a bad way. Murphy's Law, whatever you want to call it, he was screwed. And I think a prolonged trial would have destroyed his career, even if he'd been found not guilty. Because he would have been found guilty. "Well, we don't find you guilty of Rob, but you were guilty of this, this, this." Would destroy his career. So that's why he paid out the money he did. But he put himself in this position. And he's had other issues. There's another lawsuit. I believe he settled that. So he's got a track record of abuse towards women, allegedly. And that's not good for his image. So he needed to get this out of the way. So if he's going to have nearly a $100 million contract, paying her $15, $16 million is nothing in the grand scheme of things. And that's one way to look at it, and that's how I look at it. So his people are probably behind the scenes, and he may have gotten word, "Hey, you know, if you come out of this clean, or if we keep this on down low and you quietly get settled out, it'll blow over. We'll have you back." And I think that's what's going to likely happen here. Because Sharp is popular. He does have chemistry with Stephen A. Smith. And he's not going to boost ESPN ratings, but they're no longer going to crater. They'll stay better. Because, look, ESPN is a dying brand. Disney's been trying to get rid of them, can't. They're going to have a ESPN app at like $30-40 a month. That's going nowhere. I can tell you that now. People will not pay for that. They will look for alternative media. I think the next fight that we're going to see is in sports landscape in the next 15 years is going to be the media landscape of how much taxpayers foot these bills. Because you're going to see all these bowl games, all these series, all that is going to go to pay for play. Meaning you'll have to pay to watch the Super Bowl one day. And I think once that happens, you're going to see no funding for stadiums, no funding for this, no funding for that. That's going to be the next battleground 15, 20 years because we're going broke with $37 trillion. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's get back to Sharp. So there are people who think he will not come back. You know, the lingering public image, the damage done from this, his past relationships. There's people internally at ESPN who won't want him back. However, the settlement timing, the undisclosed terms, how it was kept on down low will help him come back. But on the flip side, that same type of scenario fuels perceptions of a cover-up. Oh, he did something. He just put buying her off. So I think that there's uncertainty here, but there's no major barriers to come back. And Stephen A. Smith likes him. He distanced himself. See, this is the thing. Stephen A. Smith and Sharp, they're not friends. They may claim to be friends, but you saw how quickly Stephen A. Smith dumped him. Stephen A. Smith cares about his career only. Sad but true. Right or wrong, I'm not saying. I'm just telling you how I perceive it. Some people might go, "He's trying to protect his family, trying to protect his business, his image." Exactly. I get it. But then there's going to be one side that says, "Well, would a real friend have done that? Dump his friend, throw him under the bus." You see, there's both sides. But Smith knows and sees they have chemistry. There are PR hurdles, though. So we will see. So this lawsuit has not concluded. Sharp admits no wrongdoing, and both parties acknowledge a consensual relationship. So the public is going to shift to his intent to return to ESPN amid lingering doubts from network insiders and the accuser's post-settlement career change. My point being is he did not state guilt to anything, and that's the key thing here to know. And because of that, because how this went underneath the radar of most news media, I think there's a good chance he returns. All right, let's move on. Shane Gillis shocks ESPYs with bow jokes. So comedian Shane Gillis delivered a provocative stand-up monologue at the 2025 ESPY Awards, and that's owned by Disney. Very woke, very cultured. They've lost billions because of being woke, and they allowed Shane Gillis to go on. And Shane Gillis is known for his unfiltered humor. He targets political figures, illegal immigration, cultural sensitivities. He joked about Trump, Epstein, and the WNBA, which are big no-nos at the ESPYs outside of Trump. This event happened during what some see as a post-cancel culture resurgence, meaning the woke have lost. They threw everything they had. They took a lot of lives with them, conservative, but they eventually lost because they went over the top. That's why I don't see Ryan Clark there 5 years from now. You know, but is this the beginning of the woke is dead movement? Or I'm sorry, is this the closing out and woke is dead? Was Shane Gillis funny? I didn't think it was funny. He sounded tentative. He sounded scared. And that made the jokes unfunny because the delivery didn't hit. What was my proof? Easy. The crowd chuckled or, ooh, he said that. But they didn't laugh. They weren't like, oh my God, they weren't cracking up. And that's the difference between a good and a great comedian. Gillis, for those of you who don't know, he was fired from SNL in 2019 for a controversial podcast remark about Chinese people. He rebuilt his career. He just sold out arena tour, so who am I to say? But I think, you know, I'm not going to go down that road. It's the same road as I always talk about Bruce Springsteen. When you compare him to Prince and Michael Jackson, there is no comparison. The guy can't hold a candle to those two. I view Gillis the same way. He's just not that funny. But to each their own. He has a series on Netflix's Tires. I was told, hey, check it out. It's funny. I couldn't get through the first 20 minutes. I haven't turned it back on there. Again, he's just not my – I don't find him funny. He's just a fat, pasty-looking white guy. But he's beloved. Top-tier podcasting presence. And he's the voice of unapologetic humor. And again, to each their own. If y'all love him, God bless you. I love Jeff Dunham. Most people who view themselves as serious aficionados of comedy go, he's not a real comic. I'm like, he makes me laugh. He makes me crack up. That's all I care about. But I love Richard Pryor, too. I used to love George Carlin, rest in peace. But I saw him like a few months before he passed. He'd gone too political. He was conservative. But it's like, dude, I just want to laugh. I don't want you to tie in your politics into your humor. And it wasn't funny. Rodney something had a show on ABC many years ago. Hilarious. Got a divorce. His last show was terrible. It was all about divorce. Yeah. So, you know, but Shane Gillis had great jokes here. He just had terrible delivery. Talked about Joe Rogan and Trump. Trump joke about the UFC. Epstein joke. What was funny was he tricked the audience by introducing a fake WNBA player. Brittany Hicks in the audience, really. Brittany Hicks, let's give it up. And everybody's Then he goes, quote, that's my friend's wife. I knew none of you knew WNBA players. That's crazy, you clap. That's about the funniest thing I heard. Joked about Caitlin Clark and the Waffle House. She's continuing. She's going to retire to continue fighting black women, but at the Waffle House and not at WNBA. Now, people did get discomforted with that. It was delivered terribly, and it just wasn't funny. I'm like, bro, those type of jokes you better hit. Not North Carolina coach Bill Belichick again. And these jokes, they got the crowd chuckling. He even expressed his belief at Disney's approval. But And he did go against the grain and hit him hard. Hit him hard. And the fact that this happened is unheard of. This would never have happened. Last time I remember something like this is with Ricky Gervais at the Globes or Emmys. The Emmys, I want to say. You know, he just chastised the crowd and cracked on them over and over and over. But he was funny. Gillis was not. But I don't think it's the end of woke. I think we're still in a battle. It's just we have the leverage. It's like a basketball game. We're down by 20. Now we're up by 10. Or 5, rather, as I say. You know, and the battle continues. And so for that, God bless him for helping break that barrier down and to keep it down. I just wish he had been a better comedian. You know? So it's not the end of woke, but we're winning the battle at this moment. And he was not funny. So it was a stark departure from the Vince polished form. Let's give him credit for that. And he's underscored a growing appetite for unfiltered humor. We want to laugh. We want to laugh. So he reclaimed the space for boundary-pushing comedy. He did do that. But he did expose tension between mainstream platforms and evolving audience expectations. The audience there, they're all, a lot of those in the audience, bigots. They're like, oh, and some of them booed, you know, screw you. Now, his humor did not land for me. To each of their own. But it was a well-needed shot in the arm. All right, let's talk about the WNBA expansion. Let's talk about these women with their pay me. So this is the reason I am doing this story. This was WNBA All-Star game, what they came onto the court. Pay us what you owe us. They were making a political statement. CBA, I don't mean political as in Trump, Obama type, but political as in WNBA collective bargaining agreement. They're idiots. So I tied this into the expansion fees and to the money dynamics. We're going to talk about a little bit of the business here. Somebody made a great post on the internet. His name is Kyle Lamb. And the post accused the WNBA of operating a pyramid scheme because of its $250 million expansion fee. The Golden State Valkyries exceeded the league's entire 2024 revenue, which was between $200 and $250 million. Team values have skyrocketed. The Las Vegas Aces went from $2 million in 2021 to $310 million. That's just unheard of because it's a lie. They're not worth that much. What has happened is the Caitlin Clark brand has appeared and just catapulted every statistic into the stratosphere in positives. So that post kind of like, okay, a pyramid scheme, it's not really worth that much. And then the other side, which aligns with this post, is it's a Caitlin Clark effect. It's not a WNBA effect. And what do I mean? Caitlin Clark elevated the WNBA attendance by 50% and viewership to over 1.2 million per game. Y'all got to see this. This is incredible. On the TV viewership, it's incredible. 2021. Look at that. Look at that. You can see it right there. It's just terrible. And in 2023, you saw a bump. That was the Caitlin Clark effect beginning in college and the WNBA talk beginning. Where's she going to go? Who's going to get her? Honestly, that's how powerful the Caitlin Clark effect is. Look at Caitlin Clark when she enters the league. Look, you're talking $200,000 here. You're talking at their peak or the average $410,000 per game. She comes in. Blows up at about 1.4 million average, right around there. Think about that, 1.5. She doubled the views. Double them. Or triple them, rather. Triple them. She tripled those views. And the Clark surge resulted in players getting big heads. And they started to protest the low salaries. They got paid a lot. However, the league last year lost $40 million, and that was with Caitlin Clark there. The cost went up. They get health benefits. They get private plane charters now. They're living large. 28 years of unprofitability. The players get 9% of the player revenue share. They take none of the losses. NBA players get 50%. In terms of 50% of the league's revenue goes back to player salaries. So, well, all this is pure speculative growth. I got a bridge to sell you. I got some swampland to sell you. It's going to make it one day. That bridge is going to be the mecca that gets everybody from the other states, the LA, the New York City, everything. In reality, that bridge is a bumbly peach. That swampland has been swampland for 2,000 years, going to be swampland for 2,000 more years. That's what this is. What this entry fee is a chance for the current owners to take advantage of the Caitlin Clark effect to post astronomical league fees. If you want to get in on this, how much is it going to cost you? And then that league fee entry gets distributed. It doesn't go into the league at all. It gets distributed into the pockets of the current owners of the league who have been losing money every year for 28 years. This is one way to get them to get some money back. Because the league owners are starting to go, okay, so what? We got Caitlin Clark. We're still bleeding. So how much of this growth is league-related versus manufacturer versus Caitlin Clark? Well, we've seen the manufacturer. They just threw a number on the entry fee, and they found a buyer. How much is it, Caitlin Clark? Everything. So where does this end and wind up? Okay, so WNBA revenue last year was $250 million, up 300% since 2019. That's from Sportico. Obviously, you saw the effect of that with 1.2 million watched. So they use that effect and go, oh my goodness sakes, you want to get in? Oh yeah, I got 5 million here. And the Aces are worth 3 million. No sir, it's 250 million. And they found a buyer. Been unprofitable since 1997, losing anywhere from 10, 15, 20, 25 million. Last year they lost 40 million a year. So we're talking hundreds of millions. At least 300, 400 million they've lost on this venture. At least. That's the low end. Maybe upwards of 800 to a billion on the high end. Part of this hate from the players towards the CBA is because they now have a television deal, which they're lying. Oh, it's a $2.2 billion deal. That's over 11 years. It's a $200 million deal annually. And if they don't hit the numbers, ESPN is going to have to pay up to the advertisers. That's how it works. Numbers are promised to advertisers. They don't hit those numbers. They got to either pay back financially or they get bigger breaks next go around or they get distributed to other shows where they have commercials. Or sponsorships. So $200 million is up compared to $60 million. So they tripled the revenue there. 11 years, $2.2 billion. They're being deceptive by just spewing, oh, we have a $2.2 billion deal. People immediately think annually. It's not. It's not. So, and the reason all this is manufactured is they're using a 14.4 multiplier. So the Las Vegas, to reiterate, 2021 worth $2 million, 2021. Now they're worth $310. Indiana fee of $370, $375. How much are they worth without Caitlin Clark? I mean, Indiana is not a massive market. Las Vegas is not a massive market. And it's because they're using a multiplier of 14.4. So when I started my company, we used a multiplier of 3. If a company is doing extremely well, they'll use the multiplier of 5, 6, 7. My company was doing well. We were a small company. And a multiplier of 3.3 made us a multi-million dollar sale. Because it was based on expectations, not of what we're doing right now. They were buying us because like, whoa, we see promise here. 14.4 is unrealistic. Tech startups, Uber, actual successful huge unicorn startups get those type of multipliers. By unicorn means it's an exception, the rarity. WNBA has been around for over 30 years now, and they lost money every year. You know what you're getting. It's not finally peaking. It's a Caitlin Clark effect. So they say it's optimism about future revenue because we have 48% attendance surge, 54 million unique viewers on throughout social media and the internet, $2.2 billion media deal, 11 years, and we're only losing 40 million. It's inflated, that multiplier effect, because it heavily relies on speculative future growth that we have never seen and that is now being seen, and it can be directly attributed to one individual. Again, attendance, 50% increase. Sellouts, 156%. Indiana Fever, up 319%. They're bringing in 17,000 fans per game. When Caitlin Clark goes to a different venue, they go to the bigger stadium to accommodate the fans. 1.2 million average per telecast, up from about 450,000 last year, half a million last year. 54 million unique viewers, up 170%. Advertising is up 641% revenue on Disney platforms. 60% more advertisers. Advertisers get lured in. Eventually they figure it out. So this is nice. Can it hold? No. Merchandise, 26% year-over-year increase. Caitlin Clark effect. Her jersey is creating that, and it's creating a bleed-over effect. So everything Caitlin Clark has a bleed-over effect that helps uplift the league. Her impact, Fever games average 1.2 million versus 394,000 for others. See that average last year? 1.2 million for her games, 394,000 for others. 19 of the 22 games with a million-plus viewers were because of Clark, and all the players were bitching. How come they're getting 40 games Fever are? Why? Because that's where the advertisers want. Because they know they're going to get their money's worth. They know that the odds of a 1 million plus viewers a game is almost a lock compared to no Clark games. See, and the players are too ignorant. I'm not going to say stupid, but ignorant, meaning they just don't realize. They should, but they don't. College-educated women, too dumb to realize the realities of the free market system. Capitalism. League attendance is up 88% for Clark games. The Fever attendance is up 136%. All-Star game in 2024, 3.4 million. It was up 305% from 850,000 the year before. The economic impact, 1 billion plus projected via tickets, merchandise. Caitlin Clark. Here's a reality check. After Clark got injured earlier this year, WNBA games dropped 55% of viewership. Indiana Fever games specifically fell 53% from 1.8 million to 847,000. The longer she's out, the more that average will drop, and they won't tell you that. Oh, we can bet on 847. No, the longer she's out, 847,000. They're assuming she's been in the league for 15 years. The beating she's taking, I look at 5 years. The All-Star game, ticket prices dropped 50%. Well, not quite, 48%, from 121 to 64 after Clark's injury forced a withdrawal. They're not telling you that. Now, max salary is about $250,000 in the WNBA. Rookies start out at about $77,000. They want 50% of revenue sharing like the NBA. That's not going to happen. And I would sit there and say, all right, strike. Where are you going to go? Are y'all going to be going away from your families to play in Europe? Knock yourselves out. And the longer they strike, the higher odds become daily of Clark getting locked into a bigger contract with a European. Or she just sit out. She's got like a $30 million contract. She's got more millions with endorsements, but she got to play. So they run the risk here. So Portnoy was talking about how this is great. Look at the numbers. He's lying. He loves Caitlin Clark. He watches the WNBA. He's a fan. So he's looking at it from the over-optimistic numbers outlook. And he's a smart guy. He says his head's bigger than others, so he must be smart. No, he's an idiot here. It's filled with helium. Boop, pops. brilliant guy in many ways, but not in this one. So Kyle Lance tweet that the expansion fees is more of a pyramid scheme. It's kind of true. They just jacked up a price. The new ownership comes in, buys a team. All that money goes into the pockets of old ownership that has been bleeding money. Classic pyramid scheme. 14.4 revenue multiplier inflates evaluations. It's speculative for a league that has been unprofitable since 97. Dave Portnoy talks about rising valuations and metrics. He justifies high player pay, and he doesn't acknowledge or look at the pyramid dynamics, which is clearly what this is with that fee that he uses. Look at ownership, what they have to pay to get a new team. The risk, Caitlin Clark gets hurt the way they beat her up. They're assuming she's here 15 years to build this league. There is no counter to her. The Reese-Caitlin Clark rivalry is a manufactured one. Reese is not very good. She got a higher Instagram follower. Caitlin Clark does not live on Instagram. Reese's life is built around her Instagram account. And God bless her. You know, she got 5 million people, I think, on there. Yeah. She can monetize that, and she does. Yeah. So the WNBA's growth is fueled by Caitlin Clark. All this nonsense is built on speculative fees and numbers that really don't show up when you truly crack it down. When you take out the one ingredient in the formula, everything collapses. Don't forget that. They may get their money this go round, but in 5 years, this league's going to be back to where it began. All right, the final whistle. Let's talk about some of these quickly. T.J. Watt secured a record-breaking $123 million contract as the NFL's highest non-paid quarterback. $108 million is fully guaranteed, $41 million per year, surpasses Jamar Chase's $40.2 million or $0.3 million annual average. It also outpaces Myles Garrett, another defensive end, $40 million annual deal. So is he worth it? 108 career sacks, 3 NFL sack titles, 4 first team all pro honors, 2021 defensive player of the year, 2021. We are in 2025. The Super Bowl will be played in 2026. He has record time, 22 and a half sacks years ago. So they say he's outplayed his prior deal. He's being paid for all that. Why? Because he's 31. He's on the wrong side of 30. He gets hurt. It's going to take longer to injure, to heal. He played all 17 games last year. 11 and a half sacks. Oh, that's good, Williams. 61 sacks. Oh, 40 solo. Damn. 7 pass defender. Oh, 2 forced fumbles. You go, boy. And 1 fumble recovery. Oh, yeah. So he was a top-tier surge. Pro Bowl honors. Here's my issue in one point that will prove me right. He recorded 3 sacks in the second half of the 2024 season, weeks 10 to 18. He faded faster than a haircut job at a barbershop. Mark my words. Give me Trey Henderson. And the Bengals are screwed. 35 sacks over 2 years, 5 more than Watt. He's earning much, much less. He's going to hold out. They're going to be forced to trade him. So, yeah, overpaid. He's being paid for his past, not his present, and they will regret that. It's going to hamstring your salary cap, and you're not going to be able to bring in great talent. You guys are screwed. And Aaron Rodgers is a bleeping idiot that has signed to play. I would have figured some way to work something out with the Vikings. With the Vikings, and Aaron Rodgers, they would have become a Super Bowl favorite. Without them, some moron out there said, yeah, they upgraded the position with J.J. McCarthy over Sam Darnold. I'm like, are you high? No one knows what the hell McCarthy's going to do, you moron. All right, Tucker Carlson downplays transgender athletes in women's sports. So Tucker Carlson, he dismissed transgender athletes in women's sports as a minor issue. He did that at a Turning Point USA event. Now, Republicans are focused on this. Trump won battleground states because of this issue. You see, Tucker Carlson, he's kind of drank the Kool-Aid. He's jumped the shark. If you disagree with Tucker Carlson, you're part of the swamp. You're part of the establishment. you hate America. Ted Crossan is brilliant in his own ways, but he's got daddy issues. His dad was part of the world he hates. He wants us all to focus on the swamp, on these people, on Israel. He's really on the verge of being a legit, full-blown anti-Semite. I'm not saying he is, but that's how he's coming across. And I used to subscribe to Tucker. I used to follow him, listen to him. I'm like, dude, you lost it. Now, when I say daddy issues traditionally are you have the female has daddy issues with a dad, grows up dating older men, gets beat on or abused or mistreated or whatnot. Tucker loved his daddy. And the reason they have daddy issues is they love their daddy. But they have issues with him, and they don't know how to handle them as adults. Tucker, same way. His dad lived in that swamp world. He was part of the swamp. Dearly loved his dad. Thought his dad was a good man. Tucker, one time, I remember when I was a subscriber, listening to him doing an interview, talking about how his dad bought some nefarious people to his house, like for dinner. It was more than once. And so his whole point in saying that was he got to see the whole landscape of how. I'm like, you also saw your daddy as who and what he was. Not a very good person, was he? And so he has daddy issues. Everything his dad represented and what he was, he now takes out on people who he views that way today. Now people are saying, William, why are you saying this? What about him? That's kind of personal. Really, he went after Mark Levin's sexuality and his sex. His sexual life. You know, so I'm like, screw you. The kid lives are raw. Little fat white boy there. Yeah. And the reason I say it is even worse, I come from a fundamentalist family. The worst people I see, have seen, have worked with, have dealt with are born agains who have no room for forgiveness, have no room for compromise, have no room for understanding. If you don't see them again, as born agains, you're like, I've seen the light. I've been there. I know what I'm talking about. You're wrong. You're evil. You're heathen. You're going to hell. That's kind of how Tucker looks at the other side now. He just lost he's completely lost the ability to be objective or to understand both sides. I have issues towards Israel, the Liberty incident in the 60s. They never paid for that. Stealing our nuclear schemes, blueprints. Without us, they're dead. And they don't look at Christians as they look at Christians below them. So, yeah, I have issue with them, but they're our only ally in the Mideast. They're the only democratically elected country. They're the only country that's closest to America. Where else will you see gays allowed freely to live their lives? Israel, that's the only place. If I attacked Tucker's kids, or anybody did, with a bat, barbed wire, shoved it up their rectum, their vagina, whatever you want to do, over and over, you think Tucker wouldn't do something about it? But yet he deems that Israel shouldn't. He gives platforms to who I view as anti-Semite and Nazi supporters, as in the martyr made guy. The guy's so wrong on some of his facts and creates some false narratives. You know, so Tucker, to me, has jumped the shark and has lost it. So him saying transgender is a secondary issue tells me, oh, you don't care about American girls. You care more about Palestinian kids than you do American kids. Don't tell me what's more important. My country's more important than what's happening in Gaza. I'm sorry. It's that simple. That's what I believe. I care about what's happening in the rest of the world, but I'm not going to put destroying this country to care about something overseas to put that ahead of what's destroying my country. So screw you, Tucker. Screw you. Trump threatens to block Washington Commanders D.C. stadium move. This came out as I was coming to press here. So Trump is trying to leverage his authority to pressure the Washington Commanders to revert to their former Redskins names. Look, Trump needs to stay out of that. He's threatening to block their planned stadium move to D.C. And he posted this on social media. So right now you have the D.C. Council with 11 of 13 members being Democrats are negotiating a stadium proposal. But congressional oversight under the 1973 Home Rule Act could allow Trump's Republican-controlled Congress to block funding. A bill signed by Joe Biden in January before he left office transferred the RFK Stadium site control to D.C. But Section J allows reversion to the federal control under Secretary of Interior Doug Burgum. A Trump appointee, if noncompliance is cited. I think Trump should take the noncompliance, but let them work out their own deal. Don't give any control of anything over to D.C. They destroy that area. Highest crime, one of the highest crime rates in the city, drug deals, more murders and so on. I mean, it's just a terrible place. So how could he block the deal? Again, it's a $3.7 billion stadium deal. It's the 1973 Home Rule Act. How he'll do it, he isn't quite yet known, but Trump's pretty sharp. This whole Trump 2.0, they may lose battles on their way up. They're winning literally 99% of their battles at the Supreme Court and the higher court levels once they get away from the activist judges. So he could use these powers to delay or stop the deal. And he may use it as leverage in for something down the road. We'll see. I don't think he should, but they're saying he could. And there you have it, my friends. There you have it. That's a wrap for points on the board. So look, I've torn into the WNBA nonsense of pay me and explain to you how and why these fees for new expansion teams are working. I believe Sharp's going to have an eventual return to ESPN. And FS1 is going to once again try to compete in sports programming. And I don't think Shane Gillis has killed woke, but he put a huge step towards allowing free speech again. So I hope you enjoyed my breakdown where common sense does rule. But before I go, my friends, do not forget to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com and follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, y Pandora under the handle Grumblings Media. I am William Del Pilar. Tune in next week for more hard hits. I call the truth out on points on the board where I'm always accurate with the facts and keep it straight. Until then, stay sharp. Keep those leather helmets handy. And stay safe out there.